Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Yeah, a vision so powerful, it's like my favorite quote, a vision so powerful, it has to become a reality.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today's episode is a little different. It's an excerpt from a live event that we did virtually on May 18th with the one and only Kelly Graves, head coach of Oregon women's basketball. And when you hear him speak, it's really no wonder why he's had so much success everywhere that he's been. He's won at an extremely high level at all of his stops, and he is really, really good at keeping things simple and making things simple that maybe aren't. And that's what the great ones do, right? They make it look easy, and I think you'll come away with that impression after listening to Coach Graves speak. Stay tuned for after his Q&A. We have a post show, a wrap up with special guest host Terrence Oglesby, as well as some of our regular Rising Coaches members who are on the call chiming in on their thoughts. So we hope you enjoy, and please follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership. That's risingcoaches.com/membership. And now, here's Kelly Graves talking about his first job at Big Bend Community College.
It was wasn't a great program, and they didn't really have time to open it up, so they just asked me, "Well, do you want to do it?" And I go, "Yeah, okay, why not?" You know, we played mostly doubleheaders, and the only reason I took it, paid $2,500. I doubled my salary, plus they let me stay on as the men's assistant coach. So, you know, they got me a dorm room, and I was making $3,750. So I was in a lap of luxury, didn't have to plow potato fields anymore, and that's kind of where I got my start. And we, a couple years later, won our first championship, and then I left to be an assistant at the University of Portland for a guy named Jim Sollers. And one of my favorite people of all time, a great coach, taught me work-life balance. He had life outside of coaching, and I thought that made him a better coach. Stayed there for 5 years, and that's when I got my first head job at St. Mary's College in Moraga, California. And, you know, it was funny. When they hired me, man, they thought I was a woman the whole time. Through the entire hiring process, everything I got from them, and that was back when you just did email and letters. There was no texting or anything like that. And they would always say everything I got said, "Dear Ms. Graves." And I never told them otherwise the whole time. And so I still remember when the AD called me to bring me down for an interview. He calls my phone and says, "Hi, is Kelly Graves there?" And I go, "Yeah, this him." And there was like a long pause. So, but that's, it got me an interview, and then they brought in three of us, and I was the third choice. The first person, just was using the job as leverage to get a better deal at his school he was at. The second coach was from Florida and just, in the end, turned it down, didn't want to go cross country. So I won by default, So it just goes to show you. And I, 5 years later, was the only one still in coaching. So it just goes to show you, use any advantage that you can, and you can't get discouraged that, you know, you weren't their top pick. I'd already been turned down for two head jobs earlier that spring, but I got St. Mary's 3 years later. We'd won a championship, and that's when I learned a family lesson. You know, my wife, we had two young boys and then a third that was about to be born. And it was pretty expensive and busy, and we didn't know anybody in California really. And she gave me the old, you know, honey, if you love me, we got to move. And there's really only one answer to that. So that's when the Gonzaga job opened up, and we had family up there in Spokane. And I took that job, was there 14 years as a head coach, and built one of the nation's, in fact, probably the best mid-major, so-called mid-major program in the history, NCAA Division I. And then it was my turn after 14 years to turn the tables on Mary. And just when the Oregon job opened up, it was really the only place I would have ever left Gonzaga for. Had a couple opportunities and turned them down. And that's when I said, you know, honey, if you love me, let's go to Oregon. And there you go. So I've been here 6 years, and, you know, I think we've built something pretty special here. But really, you know, I've kind of used the same strategy, the same template everywhere I've been. You know, every program that I walked into was struggling, and wins and losses, and oftentimes in just culture and player attitudes and all that kind of stuff. And I've just tried to use the same template all the way through. So there you go. That's 33 years in about, you know, probably five boring minutes for everybody. So hopefully it spurred some questions, and maybe we can just go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you guys have questions, feel free to raise your hand or type in your name in the chat room and we'll call on you. Coach, I'll get you started. Can you talk about, you know, your philosophy and player eval? You know, obviously you've produced tremendous talent. So what are some things that you're looking for in the evaluation process and also the development?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I look at five things really when we recruit. Number one, I look for athletic ability. So, you know, it's an athletic game. And I'm not saying you have to be, you know, super quick and jump real high. I mean, Sabrina Ionescu to me is a great athlete. However, she doesn't jump that high. She's not super fast, and she's not the quickest kid. But what she is she's strong. She's got great body control, good hand-eye coordination. You know, those kind of things I consider athleticism. It's all encompassing. So number one, athletic ability. Number two is skill set. You know, I coach a skilled game. You know, we're the most efficient offense in the country, have been now for a couple of years. Our offensive efficiency this year was 123.5 points per 100 possessions. So to just put that in context, second best in NCAA women's basketball was the University of South Dakota. They were at 112. We were at 123.5. Gonzaga was the best men's Division I program this year at 118. And the Dallas Mavericks were the best NBA team at about 114. So we're very efficient offensively. That's the kind of game I like to play. Therefore, skill set is important to me. And so that's what we look for. Third is basketball IQ. Again, we play, I consider us a cerebral basketball team. We take care of the ball. We make good decisions. We play, I think, the right way. And if you don't have a good basketball IQ and don't understand the game, then you're going to have a hard time playing for us. And you'd be shocked at how many kids here's a good example. About 7-8 years ago, this is right after I'd had Courtney Vandersloot for 4 years at Gonzaga. So, you know, she's only the best point guard in the world right now. And I was looking to kind of replace her, and I'm in a gym watching a kid that was kind of on our maybe, maybe not list. 3 seconds to go in the game, her team's ball under their own basket, okay? Down one. Her team was down one with the ball under their own basket. The ball comes into her. She takes a dribble, then takes another dribble, doesn't really even look to score, then makes a pass, and on the pass, horn goes off. So I'm looking at that and trying to evaluate. Now, if she was a no-brainer who just had a mind fart, then okay, I would be okay with that. But this is somebody I was still trying to figure out, should I, shouldn't I? And I saw that in two ways. Number one, time and score, she didn't understand it. And as a point guard late in the game, you don't understand the situation? I mean, look at The Last Dance. What do you think MJ would have said to, you know, BJ Armstrong or Steve Kerr if something like that happened? Or the second option was she didn't want to take the shot to win the game. And I just thought either of those were bad options, and so I passed. So basketball IQ is important. The fourth one is upside or potential. That's coming from my days at St. Mary's and then later at Gonzaga. At Gonzaga, we were always a candidate to go to the second weekend of the tournament, but, you know, we weren't getting top 25 kids. So we had to get those players that projected, you know, that had an opportunity and we felt could improve. And then the fifth thing we look for is character, championship character. And I list it fifth because that's kind of the last thing you find out about somebody. You know, the others you can kind of see when you're watching them. But once you get to know them, then you can kind of tell whether they have championship character or not. And we're in a position now, especially where we can be, you know, a lot more selective. And if they don't fit that criteria, you know, somebody who puts winning ahead of anything. In fact, our recruiting class, we have five McDonald's All-Americans coming in. All five of them won state championships. That's important to me. They know how to win. You know, they know what it takes. They know they have to sacrifice and, you know, lead and do all these other things. So, you know, how do they treat their coaches? You know, how do they treat teammates? How do they treat opponents, opposing coaches? All that stuff, man, I'm always watching. I watch kids on the bench. And if they've got bad body language, that's a red flag. If they're not looking their coaches in the eye, that's a red flag. There's a picture of Michael Jordan kneeling, looking at Dean Smith that's kind of making the rounds on social media. And you could see that, you know, here's the best player in the world looking his coach eye to eye, you know, and taking instruction. And that's important to me. So I'm sorry about that. That was long. It's so athletic ability, skill set, basketball IQ, upside, and then championship character. Those are our five things.
Thanks, Coach. All right, let's open it up for questions. Make sure you guys introduce yourself real quick before you ask.
Please, thank you.
Terrence, go ahead.
Coach, this is Garrett Grimsley here from Illinois men's program. First of all, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, awesome. My pleasure. Okay, Garrett, I don't hear. Oh. Go ahead.
I think we lost Garrett. Garrett, we're going to come back to you, buddy. I don't know if you got a bad connection or not. Terrence Oglesby.
Make sure you unmute yourself as well whenever you get a chance.
Yep. So, Coach, sorry.
Come on, Terrence, man. You're giving us bald guys a bad name, bro. Go.
Well, I got to get unmuted. Sorry, Coach. We were talking a little bit, and you brought up The Last Dance. So I wanted to ask you a question, and you've had some extremely talented players. When it comes to addressing them and when it comes to holding your team at a certain level of accountability, how are you able to coach, for example, Vandersloot or, for example, Sabrina this year, and you kind of got to give them enough room to you know, do what they do, but at the same time, not keep everybody else happy, because that's not the right way of saying it, but to keep everybody else accountable and to kind of grow that dynamic within your team throughout the course of the season. Because everybody knows early November, everybody's getting along great, but as soon as you get into January and February, yeah, things start to get a little bit more testy. And I apologize. I'm getting muted, unmuted. I apologize. That's my fault. But
no worries.
I'll let you take it away. And I loved your points about recruiting. Good stuff.
Well, hey, Terrence, thanks for the question. First of all, I wish everybody had an opportunity to coach someone like Sabrina. I think it would renew all the passion that you have about coaching. She was a coach's dream in every which way. However, I treated her differently than I treated all the other players. I treat every player differently. And I think good coaches do that because everybody's different. You have to. So there were often times this year when I would yell at Sabrina because I was mad at Ruthie, you know, because I knew, or maybe not Ruthie, because I could get on her for somebody else. But we had some players, and you guys all have them, that are a little bit more temperamental. And if you get on them, you know, they take it personally or whatever, and you've got some issues. So, you know, Sabrina understands that. And I was pretty hard on her at times. But so I think any coach, a good coach, treats everybody differently because everybody is different. However, the point you made, Terrence, you hold them all to the same standards. So I look at those two things differently. Absolutely. And I might hold some even to a higher standard like Sabrina. You know, I remember going in and talking to her and Ruthie first day of practice this season. I said, you three, us three, me and you two, we're the only three that can't have a bad practice all year long, you know, because I asked so much of them. So, yeah, and I think the main thing with those elite kind of players is to be there for them. You know, Sabrina needed, you know, she needed help. You know, you go through your regular practice and then she's going to stay another hour or she's going to come in later for, you know, for shooting. And so you have to take that on as a coach. If I can't do it, my staff has to. And I give them a ton of credit, man. They were awesome with Sabrina. Game days, if we had a 2 o'clock tip, she's in the gym at 7 a.m. on game day. And so, you know, we had to have people there, you know, to rebound for. So it's a blessing. It can be a curse. But it made me a better coach, Terrence, because guess what? I had to bring it every day in practice because I knew she was going to, and I couldn't fake it. You know, I had to be prepared, and I had to be on each and every day. So she made me, in these 4 years, a better coach. Same with Courtney. Same with Satu, Ruthie, all these players that I was blessed to have this year. By the way, those are three players, man, that I lost in the top eight. So, God dang, I'm going to have to do some coaching next year.
I was about to say, yeah, you have all those players going the draft, man. That says something about the things you're doing right. But big-time stuff, Coach. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, Mendel, go ahead, buddy.
Coach Grave, thanks for your time. We appreciate it greatly.
My pleasure.
My name is Mendel out of Minneapolis with the Tim Moves and Lynx Academy. One word that gets thrown around a lot is culture, right? We hear that all the time in coaching. What is culture to you? How do you guys define that?
The way we do things, you know, our mode of operation, the way we handle ourselves. What I'm going to do is, in fact, I've got – you're not going to be able to see it, but right here, these are our core values, okay? And I'm going to send these. In fact, here's my cell phone. If you guys text me, you can text me anytime if you ever have questions, you know, and I'll get back to all of you today. I'll send you these two sheets. One is our core values and our standards of behavior. That's all on one. Our core values are this: passion, unity, integrity, thankfulness, and servanthood. Those are the five things. It's kind of funny. You hear those, and those aren't the typical words you might hear surrounding a basketball program. You know, normally it's toughness and discipline and hard work. No, for us, it's thankfulness. It's servanthood. It's, you know, integrity, doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Passion, playing with passion, and then unity, you know, being one. So, and then we have what we call our standards of behavior. This is how we don't have a rule book. Okay. When I was at Gonzaga for all those years and all my other jobs, I had three rules. Number one, be on time. Number two, don't do anything to embarrass yourself, the program, or the university. And number three, no drama. So, you know, at a good Catholic school, you can be vague like that. You get to a state school like I am now, and they said, no, Graves, that doesn't cut it. You gotta bring a little bit more. So, We have a rule book I don't really pay much attention to. Don't tell my bosses. But what we've chosen to do is put it in a positive term. We have 10 standards of behavior. This is who we will be. We're going to be positive. You know, we're going to respect each other. We're going to play for each other. Selfless, you know, and on. Okay. And then on the backside is I have what I call the components of our championship program. I wrote this, you guys, in 1989 before I landed my first head job. And it's what I've lived by as a coach. And it goes along with your question, Mendel, about, you know, who we are, you know, what is our culture. And so I'm going to send you these two sheets. If you guys text me, here's my cell Coach, phone number.
Coach, we were streaming on YouTube as well. So do you want me to type your number in the chat, or do you want to, I just didn't want you to put it out on the entire internet.
Yeah. Type it in the chat. Would you? Okay.
You might have a 1,000 phone calls. So
that's okay. Hey, it's okay. Just don't call me for a job. You know what I mean? But anytime you have questions, I'd love, and then call me. That's the best way. I'm not much of a texter, but I will text you these two sheets. And I think that'll answer your question, Mendel. But your culture is who you are, what you believe in, how you do things every day. And I think it's critical you set that. After my second year at Oregon, I had cycled through the entire team. So my third year, the year Sabrina came in as a freshman, we had a clean slate. We didn't have any holdovers. But when I first got to Oregon, I had to let a young lady go. She averaged 22 a game in the Pac-12, leading scorer in the Pac-12. There was no way I was going to coach that kid. No way. She didn't even make it to the first game. She transferred at break, went to another Power 5 school in the SEC, and guess what? She didn't make it to their first game the next year either. And, you know, I remember she walked out of practice one day. Where are you going? I don't like this drill, coach. Wait, what do you mean you don't like this drill? So that was, you know, and it went down from there. So sometimes you just got to make changes for the betterment of the group. All right. Thank you. Good question. I'll try and limit the answers.
Thanks, Coach.
Not be so long-winded.
No, you're doing great. Let's go to Daria. Go ahead, Daria. Go ahead and unmute yourself and introduce yourself.
I can hear. Hi, Coach Grace. I'm Daria Chernova. I'm an assistant coach at Montreat College. And I have a question for you. Through your career path, what would be one thing you wish you would never do as a young coach or as a rising coach? And what's the thing you wish you would do if you're looking back on your career path?
Well, I liked my journey because being at Big Bend Community College, I had no assistant coach. I had to sweep the floor before games. I had to pull out the baskets. I had to wash the uniforms after the game and, you know, all that kind of stuff for 3 years. And it really made me appreciate what I have now. I mean, I'm at the University of Oregon, and it's really easy to be entitled with the, you know, with the amount of gear and everything else that we get. So I like the fact that I started where I did, because now I appreciate that. I don't take managers for granted. I remember the first day at Oregon, we had like 5 managers. Okay. And it's okay. Let's get some water. And all of a sudden I got 5 managers running out with 3 cups in each of their hands, giving water to the players. And I go, whoa, 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 whoa. What are you guys doing? Well, you know, we're giving them their water. I said, if they're thirsty, they can go get their own out of the jug. Are you kidding me? You know, what are we, who are we trying to, you know, we got to toughen up here a little bit. So, so yes, I like that part of my journey. If I was to do it all over again, I would focus a lot less on winning and losing and just focus on building the relationships with the players. I think that is the most important part of coaching. And the sooner you figure that out, the sooner you're going to be a better coach, a more successful coach. If kids know that you love them and you care about them, not just for how many points they can get you in a game, but because you love them for who they are, the more successful you'll be. So if you know, that's what I would tell my young self: focus less on the W's and more on the individuals. And I've gotten better and better and better at that, like we all do. So,
thank you, Coach.
Yep.
Right before the dog started barking.
Hey, Coach.
Garrett, are you good? Do you want to try it again?
Let's go, buddy.
Yeah, let's try it again. Let's see if this works. Coach, first of all, thank you for speaking with us this afternoon. My name is Garrett Grimsley. I just finished up my 4 years at Illinois State as a manager. One of the things you talked about that you learned at your time at the University of Portland was work-life balance. Could you just talk a little bit more about that and how you treat that now that you're a head coach at a Power 5 school? I think everybody's perspective on that might have changed during this quarantine time and having to take a step back and reflect. Appreciate it.
Well, maybe this is God's timeout, right? He took a 20, or she. I can go either way there, but took a 20 for all of us. You know, I think maybe we all need to get grounded and remember what's really important, and that starts with family and our health. So it has been good. There have been some positives out of this thing. For me, though, again, if you're too much into your coaching, I just don't know if you're going to be as successful or as happy. I think it's important to have work-life balance. You know, if you don't have a family, then you've got good friends, or your parents, or, you know, whatever. If you have kids and you're married like I am, then, you know, I've always felt I can be a better coach when I'm a better father and husband. So I have a couple of, you know, I have a mission statement, a personal mission statement, not a professional one, a personal one. I've got a professional one too, and it's in a document form that I'm going to send you guys. But my personal one is, no success can compensate for failure in the home. No success can compensate for failure in the home. So if I'm not taking care of business at home and building those relationships, then my life is not going to be as fulfilling, whether I go 35-0 or not. They've got to be a part of it. And I'm blessed. You know, I have three boys that are really into hoop and a wife that played basketball way back when. And so they're into it. They love what I do. My oldest son works for the Dallas Mavericks in player personnel. My middle son is still going to college, and he's helping coach a community college women's basketball team. And my youngest son plays basketball at Gonzaga. So, you know, we're a basketball family, and I think that, to me, that's heartwarming, because that means I think they enjoyed their childhoods. They enjoyed being part of, you know, dad and what dad did. So you got to have balance, you guys. Just keep it a little of both. If you start getting too much of one and not enough of the other, you're in trouble. Thank you, Garrett.
Thank you, Coach. That was great.
Okay, we got lots of hands up, so bear with me.
Okay. I'll make it quicker.
No. I wasn't talking to you, Coach. I was just saying we're going to do our best to get to everybody. Jimmy, go ahead.
Coach, Jimmy Oakland from Brooklyn and Long Island Nets. Quick question about developing your staff, kind of how you go about the process of either hiring them, and two parts to that. How would you view the experience of either an NBA or WNBA head coach or assistant and bringing them on your staff where they're not in the college game?
Oh, I'm okay with that. You know, at this point in my career, I'm doing basically what I've done for the last 20 years in terms of philosophy, style, you know, offense, defense. I don't need a ton of help in that regard, like new ideas. You know, if I wasn't, if I was struggling a little bit in what we've been running, then I would adjust and look for somebody who can help me. So basically I'm looking for a staff that, again, same thing, can develop great relationships with our players. They're willing to work. Mark Campbell and Xavi Lopez, they put in so much time with Sabrina and Ruthie and their development, you know, just off time. And that's critical, just finding somebody that really wants to work. They have coaching expertise as well. They're solid coaches. There's no question about it. They're very loyal. They're loyal to the program. I trust them when they're on the road. I don't have to feel like, oh my gosh, you know, are they doing anything they're not supposed to right now? I think that's critical. Yes, I would hire from any level, and have, you know, my lead assistant right now, who's been with me 18 years, she started at Gonzaga and worked for free for 2 years. And at the same time, Lisa Fortier came in same year, worked for free for 2 years, just willing to do anything. Lisa's now the head coach at Gonzaga, and I'm and then Jody's working with me. So, you know, they came from Division III and Division II. They were young assistants, but I could tell, man, they wanted to work hard, and they were into it. And so, hey, and then they had 2 years to prove themselves. And I had a couple of my assistants moved on. One is an assistant, one is a head coach, and the jobs opened up. So, yeah, basketball's basketball, man. I don't care where your coach. Some of the best coaches are at Division III. A lot of them are in high school, junior high. You kidding? I can go out and recruit what I want to coach. How about that high school coach that has 3'6", 2 kids 1 year, and then the tallest next year's 5'8"? What the hell are they going to do? They got to actually know how to coach and get through to kids and be creative. And, you know, if I lose an All-American, I can go recruit another one.
Jessica.
All right. Hi, Coach. First off, I just want to echo what everybody else has said and say thank you for taking the time to meet with us. Really appreciate it. I'm Jessica Thowins, GA at Eastern Washington, wrapping up my GA, thank God.
I love Coach Shuler.
Yep.
She's one of my favorites. She's a good one.
So we obviously have all like heard and read a lot about like winning in the locker room. And I was just kind of curious if you can kind of speak on just your thoughts of that and how powerful that is to your success.
Critical. If they're not a cohesive group in the locker room, you're going to struggle on the court. I don't care how talented you are. However, I am going to say this, and I'm not a walking John Gordon book, you know, I'm not giving them positive feedback every day. I'm not doing a quote of the day. I think that's fine. That's just, you know, I recruit ballers who just want a ball, you know, and if I have to get on them from time to time, I do it. If I tell them, you know, I try to tell them as often as I can, I love them, but it comes down to the unity that they have with one another. And so a great quote you can use among your coaching staff, and you can obviously tell the players, is, you know, you don't have to like each other, but you got to love each other. You know, I don't always like my brother and sister, right, because they piss me off sometimes, but I still love them because they're family. And so I think, you know, the more you can foster that environment, the better it is. And I think that was, you know, and going through hard times, we don't have a lot of meetings. We don't talk things out. I think one of the advantages of me being a male coach, and with all due respect, Jessica, I think some of the other female coaches on here will know what I'm talking about. I've coached men's as well. And one of the differences is, you know, when guys, I remember when I was playing, I literally would come to blows. I would square up with my teammates and we would go at it. And as soon as practice was over, we'd put our arms around each other. Hey, let's go have dinner. It's over and forgotten. And I think sometimes with female players, you know, there can be some animosity, some hurt feelings, and then they start grabbing allies. Are you on my side or her side? And one of the things that we do, when I see this happen, and listen, these guys compete. Satu and Sabrina competed. That's why they're first and second picks in the draft. Those kids want to win. And so if they were on separate teams, you know, they would argue from time to time. I loved it. It was healthy. And I would make them, if I saw it had gone maybe too far, I'd bring them together and say, okay, let's talk it out right now. Because as soon as this is over, I don't want to hear any more about it. And so I think that kind of stuff on the court helps in the locker room. I think, I don't know if that helps. I don't have all the answers there. I am not a rah-rah. We don't do a lot of lessons and writing our feelings down. We just don't do that stuff. You know, I'm sure it has a place. It's just not my style. But I know others in my league that do it, and they have great chemistry. So,
awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Good luck. Tell everybody up there in Eastern Washington hi.
I definitely will.
Okay, let's go to Paul. Paul, you there?
Hey, Coach. Yep, I'm here. Sorry. Hey, Coach. Like everybody else said, thanks for being here. Paul Schmora, Springfield, Mass., Springfield Central High School. Just a question back on your player evals. You mentioned upside and potential. Just some things you look for that kind of give you an idea that they have it and they're able to develop over the 4 years that you have them with while you're out recruiting. Thanks.
Okay. Did you say IQ or upside and potential or both?
Just the upside and potential part.
Upside and potential. Well, I think part of that is, you know, let's say you've got a 6'5 player. You know, she's really athletic, you know, can move well, has pretty good hands. I've always thought the two things that you got to find in a post, hands and heart. You know, if they don't want, you know, if they're not tough, they don't want any kind of contact, you're in trouble. If they don't have good hands, you're in trouble. So hands and heart with post players. So as you're watching them, they move pretty well. Maybe they can't make a layup, but that's okay. You know, you can teach them how to make a layup. You can execute offensively good enough to get them in a position where they can catch and score, but you can't get them to always move. So, you know, I look at athleticism a lot when it comes to the big kids. I think with the guards, you know, let's say a really great team. All right, great high school, Springfield High School, man, home of the Hall of Fame, right? My good buddy John Stockton resides there. Okay, you've got a great team, and you've got a fourth option on your team that really understands team. Okay, she's not the leading scorer or rebound or anything else, but you can tell that kid knows how to play. So put her in a, you know, project her in a bigger role. Going, hey, you know what? She can shoot it. She can handle it. She can pass it. She's got a good understanding of the game. She's just playing with a bunch of other really good players. Hey, I think she's going to be a good player in college. Or you look at their physical maturity. You know, look at the size of their feet. If they got size 13 feet and they're 5'11", chances are they might grow a little bit, right? If they're skinny as can be, you know, maybe just project them a little later with some muscle. So I think that it's not an exact science, but it's just kind of a gut feeling, and it's trial and error. I've had some that haven't worked out, and I've had some that have worked out.
Thanks, Coach.
Hey, Ruthie Hebert, the kid that's going to the Sky, our you know, just our all first team All-American for us this year. Hey, we were so smart with her. She's from Fairbanks, Alaska. Raw. Even the Division II coach up there said, what do you guys see in Ruthie? And at the time, quite frankly, we didn't know. We actually offered her to redshirt as a freshman. She ended up scoring 16-9 as a freshman, as first team all Pac-12. You know, thank God she said, no, coach, I'm going to take my chances and play. So sometimes you just get lucky, and sometimes you still didn't even have it right.
All right, let's go to Ben. Go ahead, Ben.
Hey, Coach. Ben Tanoff. Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate everything you have to say. We talked about culture a little bit ago, and I kind of want to look at this from a different angle. But can you talk about not what you think the right culture or wrong culture is, but when you get somewhere new, you start the rebuilding process like you have done so many times in your career, how do you implement that new culture without, you know, headbutting the people that are already there? Because I can imagine you come into a new place, even if it's a losing program, there's going to be people who don't want to change how things are done, right? Change is scary. You know, some people don't want, you know, how do you work with them and help them understand, you know, this is a new direction we need to go in?
That, Ben, that's a great question. And I don't know if I have the complete answer to it. I can just do what I've done in all the different places that I've been. First of all, is you communicate with them. You talk with them. When I first got to Oregon, I had a mural done in the locker room, something that they saw every day. It was a beautiful mountainscape of Mount Hood, which is outside of Portland, snow-capped and the whole bit. And there were a couple little, what would you call it, peaks on it. And I put on one peak Pac-12 above it, Pac-12 championship. I put above the next one Final Four. I put above the very top of the mountain national champion. And then I put there was a nice landscape and a river that kind of ran up to the mountain. And the quote we put on that was, a vision so powerful, it has to become a reality. And then I put, enjoy the journey. That was, so they saw that every day when they came into the locker room. I just wanted them to visualize, this is what we're about. This is what we want to do. This is, you know, so when I communicate with them, you know, and you're setting your culture and all that stuff, it's like, are they aligning with your vision? You know, and you just communicate, this is what we want. This is how we've got to then act each and every day so that we're capable and have an opportunity to do that. And it's different, man, everywhere you go. My St. Mary, how's this? My St. Mary's job, you guys, I just wanted it. The team had banded together, gone into the AD, and said, we go or the coach goes. That's what I was taking over. You know who was on that team that I took over? J.R. Payne, who's now the head coach at University of Colorado. So she played for me for 2 years and coached with me for five. That was her first job at Gonzaga. Tracy Morris, who's now Tracy Sanders. Okay, she's the head coach, Division I, Southern Utah University. Okay, they were on that team, man. Two Division I coaches. And, but, you know, so I handled that differently than I did ones that just had lack of talent. Good kids, just not much talent. So every situation's a little bit different. I had to have fun with the group in St. Mary's and just kind of, you know, build that strong relationship. The other places I just had to, hey, this is how we're going to try and do it. You know, you're not good enough. We're going to have to move on kind of thing. So it's all different. You got to play both sides. You got to appease them to some degree, but you got to lay down the law over here. The middle area is where you're going to have issues. So you got to love them and communicate with them. And that will bridge that divide. And if it still doesn't work, bye. You got to go, man.
Yeah. No, thank you. I appreciate that. Can you repeat what you said is on that mural, a vision so powerful?
Yeah, a vision so powerful. It's like my favorite quote. A vision so powerful, it has to become a reality. And because I had the vision, I know what I wanted to do, but if they don't buy in or they don't have the same vision you do, if they're on a different page, then it's just not going to work. But if you really, all of you have that powerful vision together, yes, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to go about our daily interactions as if we're champions. You know, it's worked for us.
Awesome. Thanks, Coach.
Although we didn't get a chance to win it this year. I thought we had a great shot. I thought this was our year.
Matt, go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Coach. Matt Dickman with the Sioux Falls Sky Force. Thanks so much for being here. You mentioned early about the kid you couldn't coach. What are some signs in the recruiting process that you use to maybe find those people before you sign them? You know, depending on the level of where you are, sometimes, you know, you might have to take that person or think that you might have to take that person. But we all know that if we can't even coach our best player, then we're going to be setting ourselves up for failure.
Yeah. Well, it's not always easy. So I'm not here to say I'm getting nothing but Girl Scouts, you know, from time to time you take those, you know, you have to get those players that, you know, may not have, not that they're bad kids. They haven't been asked to do certain things and haven't maybe led the way you want, but we really vet our recruits during the recruiting process. So I'm calling not only their coach, most high school coaches are going to say great things about their own players. I like to talk to opposing coaches. How is she to play against? Okay. You know, is she good to her coaches? Is she good to her teammates? You know, they're going to maybe tell you the little truth. Talk to the club coaches. You watch them, you know. There's a vetting process. You don't always know. But, you know, I think it's okay from time to time to take a player that, you know, might have maybe not the most desirable character. If you have too many of them, they run your team. But if you have one or two and you've got a really strong culture and strong leadership, they will usually conform to that. The situation I walked into just wasn't like that. So we tried. Hey, 22 points a game, man. I'm trying the best I can. It just wasn't going to work in the end. But that's just me, you guys. Everybody's in a different place. I get it. Some of them, they're in your high school. You don't have a choice, you know? And I admire you. So I think the best coaching's going on in our high schools right now.
All right, well, with that said, let's go to another high school coach, Brandon Beyer. Go ahead.
Coach Graves, thanks again for doing this. I really appreciate it. Brandon Beyer, freshman boys basketball coach at Palo Alto High School. Just kind of curious to get your thoughts on how do you go about cultivating a relationship between your program and the men's program right now, obviously with you and Dana Altman, and then maybe going back to Gonzaga, your time at Gonzaga with Mark Few. How important is that relationship, and then how do you go about cultivating it so that your programs are working together and it's, you know, mutually beneficial for both of your programs?
Well, I've been blessed. You know, you just mentioned two Hall of Fame coaches, Dana Altman and Mark Few. So for the last 20 years, that's who I've had a chance to work alongside. I think you just, you know, again, communicate with them, talk to them, you know, just let them know you're in it together. I think you show that you support them. I don't understand the petty fighting sometimes between men's and women's staffs. I don't get that. You know, sometimes we don't agree on scheduling practice times and stuff, but I think if you just communicate, you have a good argument, and you just say, hey, listen, we're here to work together. I've had to have my SWA, my boss, the AD, I've had to have them step in from time to time over the years, but on nothing, anything major. I think you just, you know, just again, just try to work together, and again, communication, just sit down, talk to people, man, get to know them. Yeah.
Thanks, Coach.
And if they're still an asshole, just call them such, you know? Just say, hey, quit being such a, you know what? And that's okay, too. That's communicating.
Andy.
Hey, Coach, thanks so much for being on here. Andy Farrell, University of Dayton men's basketball. Wanted to get your thoughts with all the attention that you guys had this year from doing well both as a team and then some individual performances. How were you able to eliminate the noise, eliminate the distractions, keep the main thing, or use those, talk about the elephant in the room while keeping the main thing the main thing?
Well, great question. By the way, congratulations. Our true shooting percentage, so our effective shooting percentage this year was 58.3. The only team that was better than us this year was Dayton men's basketball, man.
Yeah, when you were talking about some of those efficiency numbers, I was going to bring some up to you in a private conversation later, just so we could talk about some efficiencies, because you guys were fun to watch.
Well, so were you. You guys were damn near 60, or maybe a little bit more than 60, which is unheard of, off the charts. So congratulations. Well, yeah, we weren't like you. You guys kind of flew under the radar. I saw your run during the Maui tournament, and that kind of got you guys out there and going. We had the number one expectation right off the bat. I think our kids handled it pretty well. I talked to you guys about the mountain skate, you know, and that's not something we talk about. It's a visual there, but it's not something we talk about each and every day. Our goal was not to win the national championship. We never talked about winning it. Our goal each and every day was to just get better, have a great practice. And that came from Sabrina. I've kind of changed my outlook on goal setting with Sabrina and Ruthie and that group. They preferred not to talk big picture and more about, hey, let's get better today. Let's have a great practice today. And I liked it. Quite frankly, I think I've changed my tune on how we you know, go about goals. So that helped. And then I think in women's basketball, it's a lot about the process. You know, I think if you lose sight or just put that goal out there and that's what you try to attain. I mean, we didn't get a chance to win the national championship this year. Does that make it a disappointing year? Sure, we were disappointed, but we still had a great year. You know, just a great year. And it was meaningful and rich and fulfilling. So, but you know, Sabrina, man, that kid, shoot, she could handle it. I mean, just look at her. She put it out there last year at the final, after the Final Four. No, I want to come back, unfinished business. She put it out there and she backed it up. So, you know, and when these guys would, you know, she reads replies and stuff on her social media. And when they'd say, get back in the kitchen and make me a sandwich or whatever, man, she'd call them on it. She was unafraid. And that kid would back it up. So when you have somebody like her, you know, that's a pretty good leader in that regard.
Thanks, Coach.
Okay, let's go to Jonathan.
Hey, Coach. Jonathan Finkel here. So you guys have obviously seen the rise of your program in the past few years to be an elite program. You know, there's tons of elite programs out there. What do you guys do to separate yourselves from the best of the best?
Well, we obviously need to keep recruiting good talent. It's not coaching, not women. You know, you might be the greatest coach in the world. I have better players. I'm going to beat you. So, you know, most of the time anyway, not always, but most of the time. I think two of the areas that we really focus on, and we just talked about it with Andy. I want to be the best shooting team in the country. Okay. That's our goal. So we led the nation this year at 50.9% from the field. 3-point percentage, we were 39.5, which is actually down 2 percentage points from last year when we led the nation, but 39.5 from the three, and that was third best in the country. And then we're always really good free throw shooting team. But we focus on shooting a lot. So we want to be a great shooting team. And I tell people there's four reasons why we shoot the ball so well. And this has happened all along. This isn't just this group of people. I've always had among the best shooting teams in the country. Number one, we recruit kids that can shoot. And that doesn't mean they all have to be dead eyes, but they have to have an aptitude or decent form or, you know, whatever, even your big kids, regardless of position. We recruit kids that can shoot the ball. Secondly, we shoot a lot in practice. And you guys, I see a lot of college practices. I see a ton of high school practices. I'm a learner, you know, a lifelong learner here. I when I'm in town to go recruit a kid, I'll call the local college and say, hey, do you mind if I stop by practice? And so I've seen hundreds and hundreds of practices all over the country. People don't shoot enough in practice. Jonathan, they just don't shoot enough time. You got to spend more time. We spend at least 30 minutes every day just shooting. Game shots at game spots. We also do a lot of just competitive shooting, you know, whether it's timed, competition. You know, I'm still old school. I think there's a place for just spot up shooting, you know, at different spots, but make sure that you're competing in some way, whether it's against the time or another teammate. So we shoot a lot in practice. Number three, we execute well and get good shots. And then fourth, we really understand, I think this is the best part of our game, we understand who should be shooting. It's our shot. It's not your shot or my shot. And we have a good our shot mentality, and that's part of our culture. So we want to be the best shooting team in the country, and I feel that we are, okay? And the numbers back it up. Secondly, we want to be the best passing team. That's a little selfish, man. You know, usually just one skill, one stat is good enough. We want to be the best passing team. So this year, we were actually third in assist to turn, or excuse me, we were first in the last 2 years in assist to turnover ratio. Okay. At about one this year, we were 1.91 assist to turnover. Okay. Last year it was 1.99. So it's something we focus on, passing and catching each and every day. We do peer pressure drills, and I don't have time to show you those, but they're just any fast break drill. Okay. That you can think of. That you guys already do, we do too. We do half-court drills. We do them after stretching every day. We put a number on it. They have to make that many shots in a row at full speed, talking, crisp passes to go on before we start practice. So I feel we're the best passing and catching team in the country. We focus on that. Women's basketball, Division I, 23% of all possessions end in turnover, damn near a quarter of all possessions. Number one reason, passing and catching. Men's basketball, it's about 18% of possessions end in turnover. And the number one reason is dribbling. They dribble in and out of trouble sometimes. So passing and catching is important in women's basketball. Therefore, we focus on it. So you are what you practice. So I would recommend everybody shoot more. I don't care what kind of play you're running. If you got nobody can make that basket, then you're screwed anyway.
Brant.
Coach Brant Daniels, head men's basketball coach at Holy Family College and NAI School in Wisconsin. Thanks for hopping on. Like everyone else, I've had a little bit more time to read here than normally I would, and I just finished a book by Frosty Westerling called Make the Big Time Where You Are.
Yeah.
Just curious about how you attacked that at Big Ben, and even when you got to St. Mary's and Gonzaga, to the differences in now that you are at the big time, how you go about it there.
Well, I don't care where you're at. You should always be humble. You should always want to learn. You should always treat people right. Treat them with respect. I think you can make every place big time, because isn't it all relative? Yep. You know, if you're at Big Bend, you're recruiting against the Spokane Community College or Yakima Valley College or whatever. You know, you can make it appear big time. You know, for me, it's just always been about trying to make those great relationships with people. But Brant, dude, man, you've been on a lot of these Zoom calls, right? So have I.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been a listener, you know, a lot of them. There's going to be the best coaching we've ever seen next year. We're all better. We've all had a chance to kind of look back and kind of reevaluate, reassess where we're at and what we're doing. And I think this is great. Brant, I don't know if that answered your question. Was there a part B or something that I didn't quite get into?
Now that you're at Oregon and it's definitely looked at as the big time and one of the premier programs, is there a way that you keep specifically maybe your staff and players motivated differently than you might have to, as opposed to when you're trying to become the big time?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we just kind of stay in the moment, try to get better each day. No, not really. I don't think those people that know me, I don't think they think I've changed from my Big Ben days. I have less hair. I've got a bigger belly. I don't hear quite as well. I'm definitely uglier. My eyesight's not as good. But to the core, I think I'm the same person. And I think that time at Big Ben really helped, man. It put all things in perspective. Plus, my wife keeps me honest. I got a big head. She'll let me know. And it's like golf, right? As soon as you think you've got it figured out, right? It kicks your butt. And same thing in basketball. We just got to keep getting better, all of us, at what we're doing. But no, I don't think I'm any different, big guy.
Thank you.
And I hope so.
Coach, we've had you about an hour. You got time for one or two more? Or how's your time?
Yeah, where we got? Do we have anywhere to go?
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
I guess if I'm not that good, they can just click off. I don't know. I'm all right. I got nothing going.
Well, we appreciate it. All right, let's go back to Terrence has another question. Terrence, go ahead and unmute yourself first.
Bro, Siri, that's twice. See, now, if I was recruiting you, Terrence, and I'm thinking the basketball IQ, I'm going, bro. What?
No, I was going to ask you, and everywhere you've gone, you've stayed for an extended period of time. And then you go back and you talk about a girl that's averaging 22 points a game and you let her hit the road. I feel like a lot of young coaches who become head coaches, they will focus on the present and the immediate as opposed to the process and being more process driven. By you letting her go and kind of creating something for the long term, how do you – I just kind of want you to emphasize that a little bit, because I've heard so many times a coach saying, well, he acts like this so-and-so, but he's going to get me 20 a game. I just feel like that's a pretty significant thing when it comes to building longevity. And I realize there's some high school coaches in here, so they're not dealing with the same thing, but this is more for the college coaches, if you will.
Well, first of all, that gets passed down to the next group of players. You know, they start to understand without you telling them, hey, coach means business. You know, we're supposed to do this the right way. And if not, you know, then there are consequences. So I don't need to retell that story all the time because they know it, and that gets passed down. I think keep reinforcing that all the positives. I don't know.
I probably left that one a little too open-ended. What I mean is at every stop you spend 14 years at Gonzaga and everything like that. Just kind of, how you would kind of forego the present, if you will, kind of when you're in your context of building, and you've covered it a little bit, but I just kind of wanted you to elaborate a little bit more on that.
Yeah. I'm not really sure what you're getting at. I'm not that bright, you know, just like my teams, we keep it real simple. You know, we averaged 86 points a game this year, Terrence, number one in the nation. You know what we were in pace of play? This is the anomaly stat of the year. Number one scoring team in the nation. You know, most people see that and they go, oh, I bet they just roll the balls out and play. You know, run and gun. We were 251st in pace of play, possessions per game. And, you know, so it's a simple game. We don't run many sets. We just come down and play. But we just trying to teach them correct principles and let them govern themselves out on the court. I think the same way off the court and in our culture. We don't micromanage. I'm not calling them every day. I can't remember now who asked me the question about recruiting. You remember some of you? No, you guys don't, because you're all young. There was a time when we could write notes to recruits during the summer. And after every game, you would write a note, hand it to the kid or the coach and say, hey, would you pass this on? Let her know I was here. And then you could fax them at their hotel. I finally said, you know what? This is baloney. I'm tired of this. I'm not doing this anymore. Because by the time you write a note, stand in line, give it to the coach, you've missed half the next game wherever you needed to go. So I would call the kid. I'd say, hey, listen, do I need to write you a note or fax you at the hotel after every one of your games? And if they said, well, yeah, you know, coach, I really like hearing from you, I'd say, listen, best of luck. It's just not going to work. If they're that needy now, can you imagine when they're part of your program? So, you know, if they say, yeah, coach, that doesn't really matter. You know, I know you're there, or, you know, whatever, then those are the kids that we continued to recruit. So, I don't know. You guys are all young. You don't remember those days. There was a day, literally, we could fax a kid. No more notes. We could fax them. Can you imagine faxing them? And they get to the hotel, and there's like 20 faxes from 20 schools saying, wow, you're really great, man. It was fun watching you. I got tired of that.
Right.
All right, Terrence. I'm sorry. I basically didn't have an answer for you.
No. Well, I kind of got stuck between a rock and a hard place because you basically answered my question through all these other guys. So thank you for elaborating.
So I apologize for not bringing more here, to you. You know, doing this, and I tried to put the attention over here. Razzle dazzle.
I love it, Coach. Thank you.
All right, buddy.
All right, let's go to Travis.
Coach, Travis Lewis, Toledo St. Francis, head boys basketball coach. You talked about watching The Last Dance and really wanted to see. I mean, as a coach, we constantly evaluate ourselves in comparison to other coaches. Wanted to know your thoughts on how Phil Jackson managed the just Jordan and Rodman and Pippen and those guys after watching all 10 series.
Okay, for the sake – I don't want to turn half of you off here, but see, I'm a LeBron guy. I think LeBron's the greatest player ever as a player. Now, you MJ folks, I got you. I hear you. And I have a newfound respect for him from watching this. I watched every minute of it, loved it. And I forgot really how great he was. But Phil Jackson, man, that dude, he's on point. There's a reason he's won 11 championships. And I thought I was just impressed with how he treated those players. Weren't you?
Yeah, I think just the way he handled Dennis Rodman. I mean, seeing Rodman walk around with Emma pants on and white t-shirts and Jordan and Pippen wearing full suits, it was just a different mindset, different personalities. I like to say a lot of times, coaching is more social work than anything.
I agree with you. And he let – you know, Michael Jordan was the coach of the team, right? I mean, Michael never, you know, put himself above Phil. You know, he respected the position, but that's, I thought, the beauty of Phil. He was there. He definitely a leader, but he let them coach themselves. It was their team. It wasn't about him, and I love that. I think that's great. And how many championships you think LeBron wins if he's got, you know, if he's got Phil, right? I mean, Phil's a Hall of Fame coach. That helped. You know, LeBron, he took David Blatt, Mike Brown, Ty Lue, Eric Spoelstra. Eric's a damn good coach, but he was unproven then. He took all those guys to the NBA Finals. You kidding me?
Did he allow a Hall of Fame coach to coach him?
Hey, that's a great point. You know, I don't know which is which. That's Jordan a great point, Travis. Hey, all I know is MJ retires to go play baseball. Yeah, right. And then I'm just kidding you, man. And they lose what, two more games or three more games the following year? He had a pretty dang good team. LeBron leaves to go to Miami, and they lose like 28 more games, right? 28 more games. And they get Kyrie number one. All right. I didn't mean to get off topic.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Travis, in your description of Dennis Rodman, you left out the Miller Lights that he carried around with him in the locker room. That was the best part.
Gordon had a couple Miller Lights before a game. So.
All right, let's go to Aaron. Go ahead, Aaron. Aaron, you there? Okay, we'll come back to Aaron. Let's go ahead and go to David.
Coach David Bentley, assistant at Hargrave Military. Just wanted to ask, with this transfer rule coming up, what your thoughts are. You know, obviously they say the rich will get richer, and just wanted to see, obviously being at a quote-unquote rich school, what's your kind of take on this whole transfer rule they're talking about?
Well, you may not like my answer. I think a kid should be able to transfer any point. You know, one-time transfer. I just think that's, you know, it. And who's the NCAA to say this transfer is valid, that one's not? They either let everybody or they let nobody. Men's and women's basketball and football, and I think men's ice hockey, are the only sports that aren't allowed to transfer freely. And I don't think you find any more transfers in the other sports. So I'm actually for free will. Now, if they transfer a second time, maybe put a penalty. But I think one time, hey, maybe they just recruited the best player in the country at my position, or the coach left, or, you know, whatever the case may be, I think they should be allowed. But that's me.
Now, can I ask a second one to piggyback off that? If that is goes into effect, does that change things for you guys, obviously?
No, because I prefer, you know, all things being equal, I like having freshmen come in, you know, and developing young players. And but, you know, and every once in a while, maybe a transfer comes in at a, you know, you have a specific need. Like, we were trying to get a grad transfer this year because I've got, we have 11 players on our team next year, 11, seven of them are freshmen. Now two were in the program, got hurt. But, you know, so they're at least redshirt freshmen. So it would have been nice to maybe have a grad transfer come in, you know, in a season like this. But we're certainly not going out and recruiting, you know, players from other teams. But, you know, if they want to leave, I don't think they should be penalized for it.
Thank you.
Okay. Aaron, are you there? Okay. We're still trying to find Aaron. Let's go back to Matt.
Hey, Coach. Matt Dickman again, Sioux Falls Skyforce. You touched on passing and catching. Loved it. And I love the percentages. Is there anything else big between the two games that, like, maybe women struggle in, and, like, anything you would do differently from a systematic standpoint?
No, I think it's the same game. The one thing I would say, some of the differences that I see, obviously above the rim, et cetera, I think – you should pressure more in women's basketball. And I don't want anybody to write me and say I'm a sexist or whatever here. Where do you learn how to play the game? You learn on the playground, right? You're out there just playing. You know, how many pickup games you see 5-on-5 women out in the park somewhere, you know, where they're just playing? That's some of the nuances. That's where you learn to play. And, you know, and some of the great ones, that's like Sabrina, you know, I love hearing her interviewed. People ask her, you know, cause she's the only player. How would this be to be the only player in, you know, or the only person you're in a club of one, 2000 points, 1000 assists and 1000 rebounds in a career, the only player, men or women, to ever do it. Right. And I hear her talking about, well, she grew up playing with the boys in the park all the time. And they said, well, how come you're such a good passer? And she said, well, I had to pass or the boys wouldn't pick me on their team because I was the only girl. So I had to learn how to pass. Well, how come you're, you know, a good rebounder? Where'd that come from? Well, if I wanted to shoot, I had to go get my own rebound so that I could do it. And then the reason she was competed so well is because if she wanted to stay on the court, she had to win. So, you know, so that's kind of where you learn and I would say, so put pressure on women. They're taught sometimes from when they're little girls to run plays. So, you know, different situations. If you sit in a zone, good women's team's going to kick your butt. They're going to pick you apart because they can shoot it. Right. So try to put more pressure on them, trap more, those kind of things. That's what we've seen. And teams have had success with us do those kind of things. I don't know, Matt, if that's what you were, where you were going skill wise, man, it's the same game, I think.
Yeah, I think from what I got from it is decision making when you're pressured is one thing that's something that you would focus on more than maybe you would if you were coaching a men's team. Is there anything else that you can quickly just put out there, something like that? No?
I don't know. I think positive reinforcement goes really well. I think motivating by team, you know, I think sometimes when you tell a young woman, at least in my programs, you know, by your actions or your lack of production or whatever, you're letting the team down. That's powerful to them. You say that to a guy, they'll say, well, I don't care. You know, it don't matter.
Yeah, there's definitely differences in coaching in that aspect. But I appreciate your answer. Yeah. Appreciate your time.
No problem. No problem.
You have a fax number, by the way? I want to send you one after this.
A fax number? Jeez. I like you, Matt.
All right. We got two more, Coach.
Okay. Yeah, I see some people yawning, so it's time to
Let's go to Mendel.
Next stage.
Hey, Coach Mendel, back in out of Minneapolis. What's your definition of success?
Mine would pale in comparison. Read John Wooden's. He has the best definition of success. So that's your homework, Mendel. It's a very famous quote. So I'm going to just leave it at that. John Wooden.
What's understood did not be explained, sir. I got you.
Okay, Aaron, we're going to try it. Third time's a charm. All right, Aaron's.
Or three strikes, you're out, right?
Three strikes, you're out, I guess. Yeah, well said.
What was Michael Scott's famous line? Along those lines on The Office. I can't remember.
I don't know. Anybody? Any Office watchers?
Any Office fans?
I guess not. Tough crowd, Coach.
Yeah, I guess. Hey. I think these are Friends fans. This is more of a Friends crowd.
I saw some nods.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Just a quick reminder, please subscribe, write us a review. Follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com. And please stick around now for the post show.
T.O., before first of all, I feel like I should reintroduce you. Terrence Oglesby, former player at Clemson University, former pro, and is now currently with, what are you with? Tiger Media? What is it called, Terrence?
To be honest with you, Gordo, I'm just trying to make it all work. I work with 105.5 The Roar, which is a flagship station for Clemson University, and I've done radio and television within the Clemson University athletic department. So just kind of working through, and like a lot of you, I see David Bentley, a good friend of mine. A lot of you guys, I did the coaching route for about 3 years before some things happened within the family. So, yeah. I enjoy kind of sitting around, so I feel like I can empathize with what a lot of you guys are going through. So thank you for staying on.
Yeah, before I get your thoughts, the one thing that stuck out to me, and this is like a small thing, but like everybody who asked a question, he talked to them by their name. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Like, I know that's a little thing, but that was like a big deal to me. He remembered everyone's name. He didn't have to like – I mean, it was every single person. He batted 1,000 on that. It just shows you the type of person he is.
Well, it shows you, too, how he attacks every conversation. I would imagine that's the reason he's had so much success recruiting, because the way he kind of attacks, you know, each question that everybody, you know, threw his way, just the ability to relate with you pretty much immediately. And even though he was giving me a hard time as a bald brother, I'll take it. But I thought he it was unbelievable. I think his personality and some of the things he talked about as far as the way he recruits and everything like that, I could see him coming into somebody's living room and just blowing people away. So a really personable guy, for one, and the way he holds people accountable, too, I thought that was another really interesting thing.
Go into that a little more in terms of the accountability piece.
Well, we talked a little bit about it, you know, Sabrina in particular, and he's had Vandersloot, and he's had all these different superstar girls. They've done a fantastic job as far as, you know, you don't treat everybody the same way. And I think that's significant. He's not the first great coach to say that. You know, Pat Summitt said a lot of the same things. You don't treat people the same way, which is, I think that's, to me, that's a foregone conclusion. And one thing that he emphasized was, hey man, not everything is going to be fair. I'm not going to treat every person the same way. And it's not your shot, it's our shot. And those two things stuck out to me. And just being able to, I want to say, kind of filter the shot selection or filter who your people were. I think obviously you can run a million different things, but getting the right people, the right shots is, you know, the biggest thing for me. And I'm an offensive thinking dude. So, you know, that just as well as anybody, Gordo.
Yeah, no question. Offense all the way for you.
No defense.
I didn't go that far. I didn't say no defense. I just said offense all the way. Yeah, and like Menelik just said it in the chat there, and I'm going to get Menelik to speak up in a second, but he said the word genuine, 100%. I mean, like, I feel like he probably could have stayed on that Zoom chat for another hour talking to us about the, you know, LeBron.
Yeah.
And even though Mendel was fist pumping over there.
You know
it. I had to end it. Mendel, that just made your day, didn't it?
Oh, man. Can nothing go wrong for the rest of the day, I tell you.
Menelik, what about you, man? What was your, like, biggest takeaway other than, like, the level of genuinity? That's not a word.
I think genuineness. Yeah, I don't know. For me, it was just exactly that. There wasn't much that was beyond that. I don't know much about this particular coach other than doing a little bit of topical research after, like, you guys posted that he was going to speak. Obviously, I'm from Canada, so who's who of coaches I don't get the same way that you guys do. So, like, when I was listening to him, I'm like, okay, this guy's successful. I get it. Like, right away, you can clue in on the little breadcrumbs that he leaves as to why he's successful in terms of, like, he knows the motivational points, but then he's able to relate them to the specific people that he's talking to. And just like Adam said, he used everyone's name when he replied to them, and he had a little quip for everybody that he was talking to as well that made them feel involved and part of the process. So to me, like, as a coach, whenever you can make it interactive and fun and captivating and sincere at the same time, just shows who you are. Like, when he was talking about himself, a little bit older, a little bit fatter, a little bit balder, all that stuff, I was loving it because I'm like, I'm aging. I'm a cresting coach now. I'm not really it's rising anymore. And I loved everything he was saying about it.
Yeah, for sure. David, by the way, came through just now with the Michael Scott quote. David, you're just like 5 minutes too late, but it's still good. So he was referencing The Office. So what is it, David? Fool me once, strike one. Fool me twice, strike three. That's pretty good, actually. That's a pretty good quote. T.O., what else, man? What else?
I thought one thing that stood out to me as far as he talked about the kind of player he recruits and how he looked at athleticism to me, because a lot of times I think some certain people, you know, I've been on the baseline at these AAU tournaments, and you look at athleticism as who runs the best or who jumps the highest. And he talked more specifically about functional athleticism. And there's a lot of guys that me and you know, and everybody in the chat knows, that they are elite runners and jumpers, but it's not necessarily effective. So the way he talked about who he recruits and how he recruits, I thought that was intriguing. And one more thing, and it kind of goes along with the genuineness that you guys are talking about. The managers, and that was something small, and not everybody's like this, because I've been in certain places where it's not that way. And the managers just, you know, if that's not, if somebody has a bottle of water, they'll just throw it at the manager, even though he's not looking. And the culture of respect, I think that's part of the whole thing for him, the culture of respect from top to bottom. And it goes all the way from him to his players to his managers, not necessarily in that order. Everybody's just together and everybody's got one common goal. And it goes to, you know, the managers and respecting the managers, and the appreciation for everybody in the program stuck out to me. And I'm sure that the ultra successful, like Coach Graves, I think that's a common theme among them.
Yeah, that was really good when he was telling that story about the managers and the water.
Teaches your players, and it teaches your players too, like appreciation for what people are doing for you. And not everything should be taken for granted. I can remember specifically getting irritated at managers. But at the same time, you know, Oliver Purnell, who I played for, he checked me a couple times, as you remember. And he was a successful coach as well, obviously not on the level that Graves has been. But still at the same time, a culture of respect from top to bottom, that really stuck out to me. I don't know if it stuck out to everybody else, but that popped off to me right off the bat.
Yeah, for sure.
I would add this. I like the fact that he always go back to simplicity, just being simple. Even in his answers, he wasn't trying to answer in some great, you know, talk or anything like that. He kept everything very simple. And I feel like at times, as coaches, we try to complicate things in how we answer questions or how we deal with people, when it really, you keep it simple. I mean, to a point, he even said, well, I'm not that bright. I just keep things very simple. You know, that is what pops up to me right away. Just even at that level, for a coach that have been that successful, to still keep things as simple as possible is definitely refreshing for me.
For sure.
Just to build on that real quick, to the ability to make things simple is something that it looked huge. Like definitely show, but like a lot of people talk about keeping it simple and all that kind of stuff or whatever, but then a lot of people don't have the ability to take something that's complex and make it simple for the layperson, etc. And he does that in all of his banter back and forth.
Yeah, no question.
And can I add to that, Adam?
Yeah, go for it, Travis.
This really, I think his ability to have confidence in himself. I mean, he opened it up by saying, hey, I'm not a John Gordon book. I don't do he was just himself the whole time, which was genuine from the start of, I'm not trying to be somebody that I'm not. I'm not trying to go with the wave of writing down your quote of the day, your goals of the day. I want you to be able to hoop. I want you to be able to be bought into our culture, and I'm going to give you the best of me each day. And I thought for me, that was just saying, hey, I'm confident in who I am, and that's what's going to make me successful. So it was good to take that away from him.
Yeah, but he balanced that confidence with like zero ego too, which is even more impressive. You know, that's even more rare, because you see a lot of these really successful coaches have that ultra confidence. They also have that ultra ego too, and he didn't have any of that. He didn't come off like he was better than anybody.
I agree.
To my point, like, I think he would have stayed on that Zoom chat all day with all of us just talking hoops.
I thought it was funny, Adam, like, out of every – we all talk about keep it simple, and that's what his whole thing was. The game of basketball came down for him to passing and catching. Like, that's something that, you know, everybody – some people, you know, as coaches, and myself in particular, when I was coaching at Carson Newman University, I would get to thinking about level 3, 4, and 5 – as opposed to, hey, man, passing and catching, that in itself of itself is, you know, just keep it simple. And if you can't do those steps 1 and 2, then how in the world are you going to be able to have a successful team? Like he said, if the wrong person gets the right shot, it's still the wrong shot. So I thought a lot of that stuff, the ability to keep it simple and not get ahead of yourself, is something he's obviously mastered.
And shooting.
Yeah, 30, shooting, yeah.
30 minutes a day on shooting, that's a lot.
That is a lot, yeah.
Hey, John, you played for Coach Knight. How often would you guys shoot in practice?
every day to start, you know, even in our pre-practice, you know, we'd have individual, you know, workouts there, you know, setting up cuts. We do the first, I'm trying to break it down in my mind. That was a long time ago, of course, but between about 15 and 30 minutes each day to start practice.
Okay.
They're literally the same things every single day.
Yeah. I'm sure you love that as a player.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Setting up cuts, you have blisters on the side of your feet, man. It's yeah. I don't put our girls through that, but I try to do as much shooting as we can.
Yeah. 30 minutes a day though sounds like a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you're working on passing. I wanted to ask like how much of practice is spent on defense. But because if you're spending like that much time on passing, catching, shooting, I mean, you're already at an hour. So I don't know, but obviously he knows what he's doing. Translated into a lot of wins for him. Well, any final thoughts? I mean, I was blown away. I thought it was one of the better ones we had. And again, simple, genuine, honest. I feel like he's like that with everybody. Probably he really did come off as like a genuine learner, or like a lifelong learner. And he had, even though he did keep it simple, he had a lot of things like at his fingertips in terms of quotes, references and things like that. So
one thing I will point out that I noticed is how analytic driven he was. And for somebody who's done it for so long, a lot of guys start to rely on feel. And for him to still be able to pop off a lot of those things like that, I thought that was pretty impressive. I thought, you know, he was pretty, he's obviously been able to blend both of them at a high level, but for him to be able to pull those stats out and be that analytical towards his work while also kind of keeping his core values. And obviously they coincide. I thought that was pretty good.
He knew stats about the men's game too, right? Like he knew Andy's stuff mm-hmm. right away. I thought that was incredible. He's obviously spending time with it and incorporating what he's been doing for 20 years, like he said, with what is coming out and what is new and making it his own.
I think even when he spoke about efficiency and, you know, their pace of play and total number of possessions, like so often in press conferences and everything, you hear everyone talk about, we want to play fast. We're going to get, you know, out and run and do all these things. Well, if, you know, they're paying more attention to their efficiency and number of possessions that they don't lose and turnovers and things like that to still be able to score at a high rate and put those points up that people want to see, but to do it as efficient as possible.
Helps when you have Sabrina too. I'm sorry to throw that part in there, but
no, but yeah. He was the first one to say that.
Yeah.
What did he say? He said, you could be the best coach in the world, but if I got better players than you, I'm going to beat you 9 times out of 10.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, guys, I appreciate you guys sticking on. That was great. Let's leave it with this because Menelik, I appreciate you grabbing this quote. He referenced the John Wooden quote. He didn't tell us what it was, but he kind of gave it as homework. So success, I think Mendel is the one that asked him what his definition of success is. And he said John Wooden's is the best one out there, basically. Success is peace of mind that is a direct result of self-satisfaction and knowing you did your best to become the best that you are capable of becoming. Pretty good. Well said, John Wooden. And well said, Kelly Graves. So appreciate you guys. Menelik, thanks for grabbing that quote. Appreciate all you guys sticking around. T.O., it's been fun, man. We got to do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for letting me join in and be a part of the experience. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.